We're talking about high-altitude balloon surveillance here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. military is doing what's called wide-area surveillance testing across six Midwest states, including parts of Wisconsin. And this is according to filings reported to the Federal Communications Commission and reported by The Guardian this month. Upwards of two dozen unmanned solar-powered balloons are being launched from rural South Dakota. They're carrying these high-tech radars, and they're drifting. They're drifting some 250 miles and landing in central Illinois. What do you think about the military testing surveillance technology over Wisconsin? How do you feel about the amount of surveillance technology in our communities and our skies? Join in at 800-642-1234. Arthur Holland Michel is co-director of the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College in New York. He's also the author of Eyes in the Sky, The Secret Rise of Gorgon Stare and How It'll Watch Us All. Arthur, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Great to be here.
Help us picture these balloons that the military is flying above the Midwest. What do they look like?
Well, they look a little bit like a giant, potty balloon. They're big, they're white, they fly at about 65,000 feet, so if you are hoping to spot one from the ground, you're kind of out of luck. And then hanging below the balloon is the sensor equipment, so that is the balloon's eyes. That is, it's a little short on details in terms of what equipment is actually on the balloons that will be tested. As far as we understand it, it's some kind of wide area radar system that points down at the ground and either collects very high resolution images of the topography or potentially detects any moving targets across a very wide area.
So why use these types of balloons for this surveillance rather than planes or unmanned drones?
Well, there are a few factors. As opposed to an aircraft, these balloons can fly for much longer periods of time. There's no need to land to refuel the aircraft or to relieve the crew. They can also fly at much higher altitudes than aircraft that are sort of generally available, meaning that you can cover a much wider area. Depending on where you are, you may also be outside of the reach of anti-aircraft defenses. Why you might use one instead of a drone, again, even drones that have the longest endurance can only stay up for maybe, if you're talking about the Department of Defense's drones, 30 hours, say, at a time, 36 hours. These balloons can fly for weeks. There may also be a cost differential there to take into account. But again, this is a very new technology for the Department of Defense, so I feel like at this point they're still sort of testing out what the cost-benefit analysis looks like compared to those other options.
When you say a cost differential, do you mean that these balloons could be less expensive for surveillance purposes?
Yeah, you're not going to have a lot of crew doing ground support, operating the aircraft. It's not like a drone that is piloted much like an inhabited airplane, where you have someone at the joystick controls at all times. And also, the technology is inherently cheaper than, say, a very large, sophisticated drone as well.
So what types of things could be seen from these balloons? What would they be zeroing in on?
Well, one of the main roles for the Department of Defense organization that's conducting these tests, the Southern Command, is monitoring borders and drug interdiction. That means you're looking at very, very wide areas to try and identify people who are, say, smuggling contraband across your area of interest. That means that you're going to want to detect anything that's moving within that area and then zoom in on it and see if you can identify it. That's why they are probably using a technology that's called ground moving target indicator, which will not give you a very detailed look at everything in the whole coverage area, but it will show you everything that is moving. So say you have a person crossing a very remote border region. Nothing else in the area is moving at that same speed, and so that individual will light up. What it's not going to do is identify exactly what that person looks like, say, or if it's a vehicle, what the license plate is.
We're learning about balloon surveillance with Arthur Holland Michel. He's co-director of the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College in New York. What questions do you have about balloons or drone surveillance? How do you feel about this technology in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Bernie now in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. Excellent topic. This is completely contrary to the Fourth Amendment. It's completely wrong for the military to be surveilling U.S. citizens, although we know from WikiLeaks publications that they've been doing it in other modalities for some time. And it's outrageous. And what's really sad, I think, is that our so-called representatives of both major parties will go along with this.
So where do people argue here our rights to privacy perhaps outweighing the potential benefits of surveillance, Arthur?
Well, you know, it's a very good point, and it actually indicates that perhaps we've reached a moment in time where our laws have fallen quite far behind the technology itself. Because believe it or not, using a military-grade camera to conduct surveillance of very wide areas of the United States from above is not illegal. In fact, if you do so for active law enforcement operations without a warrant, you're not breaking any laws because the air is considered private space. I mean public space, not private space. And anything that's seen from public space is fair game, as opposed to, say, entering someone's home, which under the Fourth Amendment you do need a warrant for. But, of course, that standard of what counts as public space versus private space was developed at a time when we didn't have giant autonomous balloons that fly at 65,000 feet recording our every move. So to me, that raises the question of whether it's time to perhaps reconsider whether indeed the technologies need to have new rules applied to them that sort of pull them out of that loophole that they're currently operating within. That being said, it's important to note that at the moment, these operations that we're talking about, the balloon operations, they are tests. What's concerning, though, is that data that's collected through a test, if it indicates some illegal activity, that's still going to be passed on to law enforcement. And there the lines get very blurry, especially if you're talking about technologies that don't require a warrant to be used.
Let's bring in Jacob now in Madison with thoughts on this. Good morning, Jacob.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. To me, this sounds like an appropriate thing for the military to do. They're testing their equipment, and it sounds like it's got unique capabilities that other surveillance equipment doesn't have. It doesn't make me nervous or unsettled. It sounds like this is perfectly normal and appropriate military activity.
Jacob, thanks. You know, Jacob is basically on the other side there, Arthur, as to the, you know, have to test in order to build your technology.
I have spoken to many people who are involved in the development of these types of technologies, and I can tell you hand on heart that their intentions are in the right place. They have many of the same sort of goals and beliefs that the earlier caller had about the importance of privacy, see. And they want to stop crime, and that's all well and good. But the unfortunate fact is that there is no single powerful surveillance technology throughout history that has not been abused at some point. And so while you can point to specific use cases, potentially including this one, and say that, yes, that is a narrow, constrained, and beneficial use of this technology, the broader question is, could this technology be abused? And are there any measures that we need to take in order to ensure that it isn't abused and so that the beneficial uses can continue unimpeded? And that's a conversation that isn't quite yet happening with this technology, partly because it has been so shrouded in mystery, which leads to a second important part, which is that if a surveillance technology is used in secret without the knowledge of the people who are being watched, there's very little accountability, and it's only in the absence of accountability that we see the really troubling uses emerge and the things that we really do want to block.
So these balloons can carry high-tech radars. Can the technology see through clouds, or what happens in storms?
So one of the benefits of using a radar as opposed to a camera is that it's what's called an all-weather capability. So with a camera, you may not be able to see very well through thick cloud cover. That's obviously not a problem with a radar. If you're looking at a crowd, though, you'd probably prefer to have a telescopic camera that can actually zoom in on individuals and give you identifications of, say, I don't know, whoever you're interested in, say, people who are causing trouble amidst a larger group of peaceful protesters. One of the areas that's being explored is aircraft that have multiple different sensors simultaneously. So say you use the very wide area radar to detect all moving objects in an area, and then you see one object that seems to be particularly suspicious from that sort of broad angle view, and then you use another sensor to get a closer look. Maybe you use one of those telescopic cameras and you can recognize the license plate on the vehicle, say, or you can recognize a person's face. You can tell whether they're doing something nefarious or not. And that's where these technologies become truly capable, because you come to a point where there's no situation where you're sort of blind. You can see in all circumstances.
Talking with Arthur Holland-Michel, co-director of the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College in New York. We're looking at high-altitude military surveillance balloons drifting over parts of Wisconsin. Your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about the military launching high-altitude surveillance balloons and what that means for the future of this technology. These new balloons could offer an inexpensive surveillance option that could follow multiple cars and boats for extended periods of time. Upwards of 24 solar-powered balloons are drifting 250 miles, going over parts of our state and landing in central Illinois. How do you think the government should be using surveillance? What restrictions should there be on domestic surveillance? Is this technology okay? What do you want to know about it? Join in with your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Arthur Holland-Michel heads up the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College, and he stays with us. Arthur, the article in The Guardian suggested the balloons would carry a system called Gorgon Stare, which you've written a book about. Who developed Gorgon Stare, and what do we know about this type of surveillance?
Sure. So Gorgon Stare actually has a fascinating history, which goes all the way back to the 1998 movie Enemy of the State with Will Smith and Gene Hackman. And in that movie, there's a government agency that uses a fictional spy satellite that's truly incredible, being able to watch Will Smith as he scuttles around Washington, D.C. over broad areas. And that actually inspired a group of engineers within the government to develop a similar capability to actually make something like that into reality. After the CIA got interested in the technology going after insurgent networks in Iraq and Afghanistan, it was sort of catapulted into the shadowy pantheon of American aerial spycraft. Essentially, what the technology is a giant camera that, as opposed to a single small telescopic camera that can only watch a small area, can watch in some cases, a whole city-sized area, tracking thousands of people and vehicles simultaneously. It has been used extensively in foreign wars, and perhaps troublingly for some, it is now seeing more and more use domestically, particularly for law enforcement operations, using some of those same tactics that were developed by the CIA to go after insurgent groups abroad against people involved in, say, violent crimes or drug trafficking in the United States.
Let's bring in Peter now in Racine. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I am curious as to who will have access to all this data, all this photogrammetry gathered with this surveillance. Who will have access to all this data that is being collected? That is my, I'm really curious about this.
Arthur, where does this data go?
Well, it's a fantastic question. You know, it sort of varies on a case-by-case basis. What we don't have at hand is a policy document from Southern Command or from the company Sierra Nevada Corporation that says exactly what they're going to do with the data, how they're going to process it, how they're going to store it, who they would share it with if the need arises. And so we're operating in a bit of an information vacuum. But the question is a fantastic one, because not only are there concerns about who the data could be shared with, but if the data isn't secured properly, someone could potentially hack into it and then have access to truly detailed information about the state's residents. So that is one of those areas that I think we should be trying to get a little more information about, often because it's more one of the sort of more overlooked technical aspects of surveillance activities, but it's very important nevertheless.
Let's bring in Alejandro in Madison. Hi, Alejandro.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that there's a point where technology starts being abused, and when that's the case, it's too late to stop it. So it's our responsibility now, before it's being abused, if it's not being abused yet, to stop it, because once it crosses that threshold, going back, it's not going to happen, as we have often seen.
So are these surveillance balloons a slippery slope, Arthur?
Well, you could imagine one of these balloons in the wrong hands being used for very nefarious purposes. Now, I can't imagine that happening in the next year or two, say. But Alejandro is right in saying that this is something that is always better to prevent from happening before the fact than having to address after the cat is out of the bag. And I think that's why it's fortunate that we're having this conversation now while the technology is still emerging, as opposed to, say, 10 years from now, when every American city is watched over by a technology like this with very little control as to how it is used and abused. And crucially, some level of action is necessary, and I think everyone will agree to that, even the people who manufacture this technology. Because as we heard earlier in the interview, it's all legal right now, and there are very few people who agree that it actually should be completely legal without any checks or balances. So I think the sort of stage is set for a level of change to happen before it's too late.
Sammy now in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Sammy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As an engineer that's avoided working in the defense industry, I thought it was just kind of interesting. The original drones, when they started developing them, people thought they would just be used for surveillance. And then one day their payload, you know, came as a weapon. It's a kind of just a cautionary tale. Could these balloons be weaponized in the future?
Oh, so Sammy is drawing parallels to what we saw in drones. Arthur, do you see parallels?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a story as old as engineering itself, that you create something with a very narrow, constrained, and noble purpose in mind. But now that the technology exists, it can be iterated upon in all sorts of ways that you have no control over. The caller is absolutely right that the drone was initially unarmed. Interestingly, though, it wasn't long after the emergence of the technology that people started trying to figure out how to put missiles upon it. I have heard some talk about how these wide area surveillance aircraft, not the balloon specifically, but aircraft that carry the same payloads, could potentially be weaponized. It's a little hard to look into the crystal ball, but it speaks to a broader point, I think, which is that is there some responsibility on the part of the engineers who create this technology to think about contingencies like that, to think beyond the narrow constrained uses that they have in mind and what the broader implications might be? A lot of the engineers who develop this technology who I've spoken to are starting to grapple with those questions now, because they're seeing that the technology does perhaps have a dark side. And we have to be realistic about that fact.
Let's take time for one more here. Patrick in Madison. Go ahead, Patrick.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good. Nice topic. First of all, I saw these balloons when we were camping in Ohio on, I think it was June 20th, near College Corner, Ohio. There were two of them up in the air. And they just stayed where, you know, in the same spot for more than 12 hours. It was pretty amazing to watch. But my initial call was in response to one of the previous callers who said, you know, was talking about a right to privacy. But we don't have a right to privacy in this country. We never have. I mean, I was under the illusion that we did have a right to privacy, too, but we don't.
And because, Patrick, we're running out of time here, Arthur, what might have he seen hovering there in Ohio?
It's hard to tell. I mean, there's been growing investment in these tethered aerostats, as they're called. The military has been using them for well over a decade. What's interesting about the story is that you try and imagine that, say, hovering over a city. That could potentially have a really profound chilling effect on people, where they may not exercise their rights because they're worried that they are being watched. I also might push back on the point that we have no privacy anymore. I think that we actually do have a great deal of privacy. And the fact that a lot of our privacy has admittedly been eroded by things like, you know, internet, big data collection, CCTV cameras, aerial surveillance, means that there's all the more reason to protect the privacy that we have left. And one of those pieces of privacy that still remains is our right to travel through space on roads, say, or sidewalks over extended periods without being watched the entire way, something called persistent surveillance. At the moment, we're not watched in that way, and that means we have privacy if we go from one place to another. But this technology could really threaten that little privacy that we have left.
Arthur, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Arthur Holland Michel is co-director of the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College in New York. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.